Hi, I'm the Strategist Cowboy. This week's first and only contestant is a high ABV triple ale from the Belgian brewery Brasserie de la Seine in Molenbeek in Brussels. I set it up against itself. Triple is an ale type that is brewed in Belgium. What it isn't is three beers sold in a set. If you ever imagine that. The beer's name is Chambre de Bois.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Our first contestant this week is thus the Chambre de Bois from Brasserie de la Seine in Brussels. The beer's name, Chambre de Bois, is French for the wooden leg, or just wooden leg in English. Belgium's two largest regions are the Dutch-speaking Flanders in the north and the French-speaking southern region, Wallonia. The capital region of Brussels, officially bilingual, is a mostly French-speaking enclave within the Flemish region. The ingredients in the Chambre de Bois are water, malted barley, fermentable sugar, hops, and yeast. Isn't all sugar fermentable, I wonder? This beer is unpasteurized and unfiltered with no additives. It is supposed to be a very hoppy and bitter beer. But there is no information about the beer's IBU level to be found anywhere I have looked. The beer is post-fermented in the bottle. The brewery is an EU-certified ecological brewery since 2021. The brewery is very young, but big for its age. The expiration date on this particular beer is January 2025. Today it is late October 2023. The Chambre de Bois beer assortment comes in a size 33 centiliters, i.e. an 11 liquid ounces bottle. The one folded label on the bottle is red, yellow, brown and black in color, with a white text. The bottle label depicts two cartoonish 18th century armies in a battle against each other, and it is supposed to be the Belgian Revolution, which I haven't even heard about before. Everybody has heard about the French Revolution, but who here has heard of the Belgian Revolution? But the beer is about war, and as such it is extra suitable for review on my channel, I think. I really like the cartoonish design on all the brewery's labels, and I can tell this beer will be excellent just by looking at the bottle. All jokes aside, it is actually often possible to know the quality of a beer just by looking at the label's design. Don't ask me how it works, I just know it. Don't believe me? Try it for yourself. It isn't scientifically proven, and I can be wrong, but for the overwhelming part, I am right. And this time, I am 100% certain that I am right about this craft beer from this brewery. I'm already willingly inclined to buy beer flakes of beers from this brewery, and I haven't even tried any of their beers yet. Chambre de Bois costs 30 kroner at Systembolaget. That is about $2.70. That is 98 cents per every 4 ounces of beer. The preferred serving temperature on this beer assortment is, according to Systembolaget, 10 to 12 degrees Celsius, i.e. about 50 to 54 degrees Fahrenheit. The brewery says nothing about preferred serving temperatures. Chambre de Bois has got an 8% ABV level. 8%. How about the experience then? Okay, let's see here. I will open it up now. It didn't flow over. Pilsner-like aroma almost. It's got a four fingers tall head. The color is yellow, very yellow. First impression, it's not sweet. It's not a sweet beer. Very hoppy, first impression. And it's rich. And bread-like. Very much so. But what kind of bread does it taste like? Either white bread or wort bread. I don't know which, because it's spicy, and the spiciness in it makes it sense it's wort bread. But the beer in itself is more like white bread. Anyway, is it malty? No, it's more hoppy. It's very hoppy, actually. I don't know what unit it's got, but IBU unit it's got, but it's high. But I don't know what. Taste on my palate. Spiciness. Very much so, or hoppiness, or also, maybe it's the herb hops. Hop that is makes it spicy in the flavor. It's not candy-like, of course. It's very non-sweet and bitter and hoppy a lot. It's not fruity, I wouldn't say, but perhaps orange peels. But I'm not sure. Well, let's say it's got a hint of it. The undertone is a little bit orange peely. I don't know if they did use orange peels when they brewed this beer, but you could. But I think it's the hoppiness actually. So no orange peels. Carbonation level is I guess. Fairly high, I don't know yet, but it's spicy, as I said, and not creamy. It's not acidic, and there are no aberrations. It's a triple, so it's not dark roasted. It's a normal barley taste in it. Filtered or unfiltered? I read that it was unfiltered, and I think it is. And unpasteurized, I don't know, I can't tell from drinking it, but they say it is unpasteurized. Unpasteurized. I don't like to read on the bottle or on the internet, because that can affect my judgment. So I usually don't put it in my, I don't, it doesn't stick to my memory. I don't allow it to do that, because I don't want to be led to a conclusion that's not mine, but sometimes I am, and I can't help it. But I guess everybody is affected by other people's reviews. It's well balanced, I think I wouldn't say well balanced, but it's certainly not bad. It's good. But balanced, I mean, this tastes in a certain direction, not like double-edged or so. It's leaning to one side, and that's hoppiness and bitterness. That's what this beer is all about. Let's see here. They say that, I think they say that it has got apricot taste in it, but I don't sense it. I don't want to say that. Apricot taste. It's not sweet enough for that. It's not sweet enough. And they say it's got banana taste, but I don't think so. It's got character, I can tell you that, because it's a unique beer. Very non-sweet, so they really have brewed up the last bit of sugar to the very end of the sugar in the beer. Maybe honey-like, yeah, I'd say so. That's another thing they stated in their on their website, I think. But I agree. A little bit club-like. But other than that, I wouldn't say that it's got any other tastes in it. So it's very clean in its taste. One moment. Excuse me. So it's got a pretty good carbonation level. What about grading then? How many devils do I grade this beer? One moment. Excuse me. Well, it's unique in its non-sweetness. It's very non-sweet. It's not sweet. I give this beer 8 devils out of 10 possible. It's a good review. It's not the best, but it's a good review. Absolutely don't drink and operate heavy machines, military or civilian. Drink responsibly or not at all. Don't drink at all if you're underaged or pregnant. Hamas's hostage taking is a calculated action. Hamas claims they have, quote, humanitarian sentiments since they have released an American elderly hostage woman and her daughter. A few days later, Hamas released two more elderly ladies. Well, sometime has got to be the first. But I just don't plain believe them. Hamas are animals. Now you've gone and given the animals a bad reputation, Roger. People like the Hamas members, and for that matter, the ISIS members, are the vilest creatures on the whole earth. Flesh-eating bacteria are more humane than Hamas and ISIS are. Flesh-eating bacteria can be said to be higher up in the evolutionary ladder than Hamas and ISIS, if we humans can be described as a social humanoid. Hamas and ISIS are right down there together with the amoeba, Joseph Mengele, with friends. Of course, you could say that even chimpanzees wages war against other flocks of chimpanzees sometimes over females. Hamas doesn't wage war, though. Hamas only rapes, murders, and torture, albeit with gun in hands. Hamas has a poor ability to wage wars the way they should be waged to win them. They are at the very least less developed humanoids, if you look at what they can accomplish in economically viable society building by their own accord. But of course, the Quran says that their so-called humankind emerged from mud. I'll hand them that. So why did Hamas return the elderly woman and her daughter, plus the two other elderly women? At least the first elderly woman was very ill, and Hamas figures that if they do away with the elderly woman now, they will de facto have sent the message that no matter what Hamas do, Hamas cannot be trusted, even with their one bargaining chip, their hostages. And thus Israel will have no sentiments for holding back the IDF and the Israeli Air Force, even the slightest. I assume that the first elderly woman would refuse to be released without her daughter coming with her. That is basic human nature. The other two elderly women were just that, elderly women, can easily catch disease and are fragile and pretty immobile. As such, they can jeopardize the whole Hamas operation. The one thing Hamas doesn't want to do is nursing elderly Israeli women, and they cannot kill them just right now. How much of a threat is North Korea's hypersonic Hwasong-8 missile? To answer this question then, for US citizens, it is not a threat at all, since it has a range of only 3,200 kilometers or 2,000 miles. Even if it had a range of 6,000 kilometers, which some sources claim, it couldn't reach any US city by far, not even in Hawaii. Let us for a moment assume that the North Koreans intend to use this Hwasong-8 missile against US aircraft carriers at 1,500 to 2,000 miles distance. 1,500 miles is still a long distance, but the North Koreans do not, I repeat, they do not have the advanced guidance systems required, like stellar navigation and all the satellite systems, both polar orbiting and geostationary satellites. They do not even have any equivalence to Boeing P-8 Poseidon that can direct target guidance against any carrier groups. Their submarines are noisy and have got a short range. Plus, the North Korean claim that this missile travels in hypersonic speeds can only be true if we are talking about the time the Hwasong-8 missile spends in the upper layers of the atmosphere. Closer to the surface, it can perhaps, at best, travel at speeds of 3,000 to 4,000 kilometers per hour for a shorter time prior to impact. For Japan, it is an altogether different thing, since Japan is 1,000 plus kilometers away from North Korea. Then we can perhaps talk about a threat against the Japanese and American bases in Japan, at least. On the topic, I'm thinking that Kim Jong-un is really interested in satellites with guidance systems in space for North Korea's nuclear arsenal. Is he overreaching? It's a rhetorical question. What did Kim Jong-un speak about with Putin in Russia during his visit there recently? Kim Jong-un painted himself into a corner. What can he do? He could send a nuclear missile from a submarine onto a major American city and then play his pair of deuces by threatening to send his other dozen or so nuclear missiles if the US retaliates. The thing is, the US has no other choice than to retaliate if they are not going to lose all credibility. So they will retaliate with an overwhelming number of nuclear missiles in order to make sure that North Korea will not be able to re-retaliate. Any small nuclear weapons state will get weaker if they threaten a big nuclear weapons state, even in peacetime. UK, I'm looking at your direction. And let me tell you something else. North Korea could end up being nuked even if they don't send any nuclear missiles against the US. It is enough that China sends a couple of nukes against the US. In this scenario, we must consider the US options. There are two options. Option one, either the US can send two or more nuclear missiles in a retaliation in a war against China and risk an extreme nuclear escalation from the number three nuclear state in the world. And that is China, of course. And option two, or they can blame North Korea for the strike and wipe out the much weaker nuclear state, North Korea. And this will probably deter China from escalating nuclear war any further. An extreme leftist is someone who advocates draconian communist solutions to social issues. It could be North Korea's Kim Jong-un, whose social engineering is extreme in the way that everyone is less equal, except for Kim Jong-un himself, who is very equal and has less equal generals than he is, but who are more equal than the people. It is not only Kim's social engineering that is extremist. His whole legal system, sentencing, police brutality, torture methods, state kidnappings are also extremist. Together, it constitutes proof that Kim Jong-un is unmistakably a left-wing extremist. The people are always a means, but never a goal for a left-wing extremist. Of course, leftists themselves believe that they are doing what is best for their people. In the Western world, you are a left-wing extremist if you are a revolutionary to the left. Let us talk about Olof Palme and the Social Democrats of the time. Another kinda extreme socialist was Olof Palme, who led the Swedish Social Democratic Party so far to the left that the party barely could keep up. Then Finance Minister Kjell-Olof Feldt was sitting and watching a Riksdag meeting when the famous words "Löntagarfonder are fucking shit, but now we've backed them all the way here" on Kjell-Olof's scrap paper were photographed by a journalist. It was in rhyme, but the translation doesn't allow it. Löntagarfonder means wage workers' funds. And if implemented, it would have meant that Sweden had become an extreme, not viable leftist country, economically speaking, like Venezuela today. Private and joint stock large-scale companies would have disappeared or would be de facto run by the workers. But Kjell-Olof Feldt's on paper scrabbled words should not be interpreted as if it was Kjell-Olof who was backing people. It was rather a text meant ironically. It was Olof Palme who was in charge, and Kjell-Olof was only second in command. Kjell-Olof himself was not fond of the wage workers' funds, and ordinary people did not know what wage workers' funds were. It was not explained to us by the journalists. Maybe they didn't know either. Olof Palme became very unpopular among his own senior party comrades in the Riksdag at the end of his life, because of the overly radical policy he pursued. No wonder he could be murdered without consequence. I seriously do not believe that it was the low-life criminal Christer Pettersson who murdered Olof Palme. I think the murder was a conspiracy plot executed by a state. Perhaps Israel on behalf of the United States. It wouldn't have been a first time Israel had killed a prominent Swede. Palme's wife, Lisbeth, pointed out Christer Pettersson on a lineup, but she is not a reliable witness because she was present when the murder of her own husband took place, and thus her witness experience was very emotional for her. The police also wanted Lisbeth Palme to point out Christer Pettersson, and this could have had an implication on the result of the lineup before Lisbeth's eyes, since she was vulnerable. Lisbeth believed, to her very end, that it was Christer Pettersson who was the perpetrator in the killing of her husband. But the problem all along was that there was no motive for Christer to kill Olof Palme. Why would a guy with no motive make efforts to kill another guy, even if that other guy is the state minister? And Christer Pettersson was kinda rational in his choice of crimes for being a criminal. He wasn't the typical junkie, and he wasn't capricious in his actions, albeit he was vagrant. He earned his living by robbing illegal dope dealers. One thing is for sure, he didn't have any money to speak of in his possession or in the bank following the murder of Olof Palme and up till Christer's time of death. One interesting thing is that about at the time when Olof Palme was murdered, there emerged a lot of talk in media here in Sweden about Sweden being under the US nuclear umbrella all of a sudden. And right after the murder, Ingvar Carlsson took over the state minister post, and he didn't have the courage or the wit of Olof Palme. He immediately started rambling about refugees, 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 as a crazy. He used the word refugees in every sentence he uttered at least once. It was the most common word in every official speech, except for the words it, that, and. I am not being sarcastic. He really did use the word that frequently. And why was this? It may be that Ingvar Carlsson was afraid of something. It certainly appeared as if he was afraid. I'm not going into conspiracy theories here. I'm just pointing out the circumstances. Olof Palme should have credit for standing up for Sweden, as he saw it. He was one of the very greatest statesmen all categories. Reagan, JFK, Martin Luther King were some of Palme's equals in statesmanship. Martin Luther King was a statesman for the black America. Olof Palme should not have credit for being an aristocratic elitist. Remember the Vipeholm experiment perpetrated on mentally feeble and institutionalized patients in Vipeholm, here in my hometown of Lund. They fed these mentally feeble patients with sugar and candy, and lots of it, till their teeth rotted. Olof Palme is said to have had an interest in the experiment being executed. There is a documentary about it all. Olof Palme looked down on those who did not do their military service and those who did not contribute to society, and as such he was pretty much a result of the times and of his party, although his party today would surely deny it. But I was there at the times, albeit I was very young. I became an adult in the 80s, and the 80s was a version light of the 70s. Society didn't immediately jump from feudalist thinking to full agent democracy in an instant, you know. Palme looked down on his opponents and gladly crushed them, even ordinary people without power. If you were one of these, there was a risk that you would be left without an income or a decent job. Character assassination was one of Palme's specialties. Some people would accuse me of slandering Olof Palme and the Social Democrats. But come on, if we had talked about the 19th century, no one would have raised an eyebrow to my remark, since everybody from that time would have been dead and forgotten, or at best being remembered in a history book. For some, what I'm saying is sensitive like an open wound. Okay, if what I'm saying isn't true, when exactly did Sweden transform from a feudalist society into what it is today? It's a rhetorical question. Olof Palme was no saint. Deal with it. My name is Roger Klang, and the sources for part of this were Esther Ekot and World Israel News. Thank you, and see you later, alligator, at a while, crocodile.